How's scenic New York City?
It smells like pee and a mixture of weed, mostly from what I have experienced so far.
That's kind of what Portland smells like too, so I guess the big city's not so different after all.
It's pretty good. I would give you a tour of my room.
Yep, that's a nice wall.
Thank you.
That's a good ass window.
Yeah.
And a really good skull with fangs. I'm so glad that's your home decor.
That's not even technically mine. The old people left it, but I was like,
Hell yeah.
this will remind me that life is fleeting and I should probably
Sharpen your teeth into fangs and extract revenge on the world.
Almost exactly.
God bless.
Here's an interesting fact about Chinese food out here.
Yeah.
The boneless spare ribs at the Chinese place near me puts bones in their boneless spare ribs. I
What?
found that out.
What?
Yeah. I
Like,
was.
I have some questions about your verb choice there. You say puts bones in. Did they take something that was originally, did they debone it and then put new and different bones in for novelty value, or did they in fact leave bones in? I'm not entirely familiar with the traditional composition of boneless spare ribs.
I saw something that looked like a thread in it, so
Ah.
I don't know. It's probably they deboned something and then they like threaded bone back in, or I accidentally ordered bone spare ribs.
Yeah, that could go either way.
Weird Chinese food experiments out here.
Yeah, I guess so. Holy shit, I'm not as awake as I thought I was. Definitely awake enough to do this podcast, just like not all that awake.
Next time I propose you get to pick the time
Yeah,
next time, because I feel like every time I pick the time for a podcast, it's either insanely early or insanely late for you. And I feel bad. I don't want to do you like that.
no, that's okay. I should probably not consider nearly 10 a.m. insanely early. It's a personal weakness that I need to overcome. Also, this coast is just wrong about what time it is, I guess. Time zones are stupid and a bad idea. We should all operate on East Coast time.
Time is an illusion, anyway. Why are we even fussing?
I mean, time's an illusion, but the very real fact that our lives are sort of running through our fingers like so many grains of sand in an hourglass, that's real, and we need some way of demarcating the units by which it does so. So
What
in
about
that sense, time is
age?
real. What?
What about age?
Well, that's time, isn't it? How would you propose, were we to radically innovate and continue to measure age but not use time to do it? What's your exciting proposal?
I think we should just measure our age by our height, and then through the process of growth, whenever you stop growing, that's just when you're officially old. That's when you're an adult now. So there's no actual age, it's just like baby, adolescent, teen, and then adult, and then age is irrelevant.
I don't know how to feel about that because I have been the same height since 7th grade, so I would have been forced into the workforce at a very young age, then I guess, or like forced to pay taxes, whatever the demarcating line of adulthood is. I'd say voting and joining the military, but I don't have to join the military, because they haven't yet instituted the draft for ladies. So,
Lucky.
yeah, I know, right? Working out great for me. I want to make some kind of joke about like pink washing the draft, right? Having Susan G. Komen the draft for the cure style. Like, it's the draft for ladies. But I didn't really know what that would look like.
It'd be very pink.
Yeah, absolutely.
All the papers would be pink, and they'd be like, you get a free container of lipstick with every enrollment.
Yeah.
Going super sexist with it, then that's what would go down.
I mean, the premise is itself a joke about sexism. So New York smells bad and you got bones in your Chinese food, but you otherwise like it, I guess. Is that the conclusion there? It's clearly wrong on those two counts.
Well, not everything smells bad. I like where I'm living at. It's cool. My room is, I got two windows so I can overhear drug deals at night.
Nice, that's the goal, right? Gives
My
you a
roommate's
sense of
window.
camaraderie. What were you saying? Sorry,
Yeah,
I
the
cut you off.
camaraderie. I can be that guy who pokes my head out through the window and be like, hey guys, what's up?
Yeah, you can just befriend them. See if you can get some sort of like shop local discount on drugs.
I should ask them for a job. I should just be like, hey, do you need a drug mule? Because I could do. I prefer not to like have things inside of me, but if there's like healthcare, I'm in.
You know, I don't know that the illegal drug trade is noted for its excellent healthcare plans.
Yeah, that's true.
However, maybe things are changing. I don't think any of the like budtender jobs that I failed to apply for here in scenic Portland had healthcare. So,
Please.
if those extremely legal, unfortunately, jobs, I mean, obviously it's good that, you know, more things are legal, but it's terrible that budtender is a real job that grown humans have. Like, it's good that it no longer being criminalized has not made it any classier as far as like the Spencer's Gifts aesthetic goes.
Yeah, keeping it sleazy,
Yeah.
just sleazy, keeping it quiche.
Yeah. Just real kitschy.
Oh, I said quiche. What is quiche? Is like a cheese and egg snack, right?
What?
I meant to say quiche or quiche, like you said.
I
But I
mean,
think I said quiche.
you did, which is like an egg pie, basically. But I assumed you were making some sort of joke, I just didn't understand. So I was gonna not comment on it.
I was very earnestly trying to sound smart.
I mean, you always, you're the intellectual light of this podcast, so certainly you don't need to try to impress our one person listening audience.
What's up,
How
Jayhawks?
you doing, Jayhawks? I admit, when I had him on the other podcast, I was like, can I really afford to lose my entire listening audience for that episode? Because it's just, Jayhawks is the only person who listens to any of this shit. So can I really bring him on the show?
I listened to the Mild Y Club and I liked it.
Oh, hooray! That's so great.
I was leaving like I might torrent that movie.
Yeah.
I haven't yet, but I don't feel like I need to see it because you all.
We did talk about it a lot. I mean, if you, as I assume all thinking persons do, have a crush on Tilda Swinton, it's good to watch her sort of vampire around. But if for some reason you're not a human person and you don't have a crush on Tilda Swinton, there's no reason to watch it.
I have no opinions on Tilda Swinton except that she is very tall.
Yeah, she's like a million feet tall.
She's like I feel like if I ever saw her in a room, I'd feel like I died. And I'd be like, does that sense?
Yeah, that
She
makes
has an
perfect
air of
sense.
gravitas. That's what I'm trying.
So she's a little uncanny, but also really dignified. It kind of works that she's an ageless vampire in that movie because she just always seems like she's confused by our puny mortal customs. Not least because I found this photo book of this art thing she did. It's so bad, and I love it so much. It was called Wardrobe something something. I don't remember. It doesn't matter. The premise was people came to this stupid art installation. They gave their jacket or their hat or whatever to Tilda Swinton in her persona as coat check lady. And then she just did art at it where she like felt the object and like moved it around and then placed a memento in it, which was sometimes a poem transcribed on tissue paper or a dab of her perfume. And she's the photos of this, yeah, you're making this face of like confusion and horror, and that's correct. Because it looks like someone took an elk and gave it clothes. It's just, it's one part modern dance, one part maladaptive creature. Like, if she weren't Tilda Swinton, she couldn't get away with it. But she is, so I don't care what she does, I'll support it. Because she's earned it by being the most beautiful creature to grace this planet.
That's love.
Yeah, or shallowness. Just real. Grade A shallow.
So shallow, it's deep.
I'd like to think so, but probably not. Yeah.
I sort of want to tell you, so I hung out with Max Rosenthal yesterday.
Oh shit, how's that kid doing?
He's killing it.
Yeah.
He's like moving to LA to live with Byron and be a PA.
What? Shit, dude.
Yeah, like ships in the night.
Wow. I never saw Max Rosenthal as an LA kind of guy, and not just because his early brand was so like Woody Allen.
He's cool. I want to say he's cooler than Woody
Well,
Allen.
he's obviously Woody Allen's moral superior.
Yeah.
He's not trash. So there's your ringing endorsement. Put that on your resume, Max Rosenthal. Not trash.
Gonna put that on my resume. That's gonna be the
Not
headline.
human garbage.
We'll give it time. He might get trashy. He probably won't. Some lady asked him about, he got hit on in the weirdest way yesterday. So he comes from the bathroom, and some lady just puts his hand on her shoulder and just like, how is your poop?
What?
Yeah. That was her move.
And Jesus. It
was
sort of
like, at first, is that just a genuine question?
Does she just want to, is she doing a survey? is she some sort of fiber advisory board member who's like, excuse, how was your poop?
She made a lot of uncomfortable eye contact from that point on.
Versus the extremely comfortable eye contact you make with someone who you asked about their poop.
Yeah. Like, if she had done it in a way that was like, I care about you. But that was a objectifying, how is your poop?
Yeah, that was real shallow. She just, you can always tell the difference between someone who genuinely cares about your pooping experience versus someone who's just asking in a really shallow way.
Posers.
This is what you get for making me do an early morning show, is I'm just much more about scatological humor, I guess. My normal Puritan restraint doesn't kick in until maybe 11, I guess. Whoops.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, normally you have the poop corner market cornered, but we can just expand it throughout the show, I guess.
You go highbrow, and then I go lowbrow, and like,
we somehow balance out to be some sort of middle brow publication.
Yeah,
that's the fucking story of comics right there, isn't it? Just averaging out two unnecessary extremes to produce something that's basically neither artistically nor commercially viable.
Maybe not in the past, but comics, you can make, you can make money now.
Not if you're not our crumb. Like, there's not, like, money in comics unless you're fucking Dan Clowes, and even then, not really. I mean, I'm sure he's fine. I'm sure he's doing fine, but like,
not driving Ferraris money, but definitely you can buy a sandwich whenever you want money.
Dan Clowes probably can buy a sandwich whenever he wants. That's probably true. Who else do we think can buy a sandwich whenever they want with their comics success?
I want to say Gail Simone can buy a sandwich.
Yeah, I bet she can. I bet she can. I feel like she can get, like, medium fancy sandwiches whenever she wants to. It doesn't have to be Subway. Like, Quiznos.
That's good. That's good living.
Yeah. Nice work if you can get it.
Whoever, what American comics artist needs to do is they need to go to
Belgium or Canada?
Pretty much.
Because it's worse in Japan, because you have to work every waking moment.
Yeah, it's basically slave labor.
Yeah, like any of the schedules of manga artists are like, I have 1 hour off a week in which I bathe. It's the saddest.
They don't bathe.
I think some of the shoujo artists do.
Yeah. Okay, I could see that. How are we gonna draw these silky bodies if we're not clean?
Yeah, that's just it's important to make relatable work that way. Work from your experience. Write what you know, which in this case is bathing for 1 hour a week. Man, thinking of actually comics, just radically redirecting that train of thought. I
Damn.
am one volume plus one chapter into Goodnight Poon Poon. You did an interesting job describing this story. Somehow it's not what I expected.
Did I describe it as a beautiful coming of age tale?
No, you were very straightforward on how grim it was. I just feel like you downplayed some of the absurdism. Like,
It's real weird.
it's real fucking weird. And I mean, I think a lot of it is easy to take as metaphor, like the god of poop, and then also is the god who appears when he's like tinkle tinkle hoi supposed to be someone recognizable? I feel like it's probably not just a random face, but
There's a lot of weird references to Japanese culture that I just don't know, and I know it probably means something, but I feel like that guy is just like someone who worked on the comic. That's what I'm assuming.
yeah, I was assuming something similar. At first I thought it might be like the author, but I don't think he looks like that. I don't know, I didn't actually look him up.
He's very sickly looking.
Well, yeah, I mean, comics artists not renowned for all their time in health spas. I was really surprised, actually, that I didn't realize it was by the same guy who did Nijigahara Holograph and Solanin.
Yeah.
Dude's got an interesting body of work.
He is sort of a gene. I feel like he's. There are a lot of people who write sort of like, oh, I'm angsty and I'm trying to figure it all out and, fuck my parents. But he's actually like. Realize, he skips all of that and he goes straight to, you realize we're all going to die, right?
I feel like he's not like precious about it, right? He's not like, these are the beautiful days of our lives that we spend figuring it out. They're, he's like, let's just sit in the fucking misery. Let's just go there and stay there.
Each and I feel like the first page, pretty much, or the first chapter of Goodnight Poon Poon is literally like, I have no dreams. I sort of have dreams. Oh, wait, my dreams will never come true. Also, domestic violence. Because why not?
Yeah, it's always sure something to think about every man characters, like characters who are relatable in their sort of tedious miseries, who are also put in really heightened situations like that. Like, it's probably not. I'm not sure I have anything actually smart to say about this, but like, I think a lot of the people who I have talked to about Goodnight Poon Poon are like, it's relatable because we're all miserable and fucking lost. But of course, the specifics of Poon Poon, the character, are like, that's a really traumatized kid who has a series of extremely improbable and often farcically weird because like the whole they're watching that porn tape and then it breaks into this dude being like, I killed my family and here's where you find the bodies.
Yeah.
So like I think what stands out about the series is the really the mundane, like I have a crush on this girl. It is literal hell. Because it's true. Crushes are literal hell, and no one should have to endure them.
Break your soul, dog.
Yeah.
There's a very, I sort of find it interesting. I don't know if it's tying into the whole idea of the everyman thing. Poon Poon by, I love that the way that he draws Poon Poon and his family, because in all, whenever you hear about him described by other people, he just sounds like a normal kid. But he doesn't even think of himself as a human being.
Do
Or
we know that he thinks of himself as not a human being? Is there a difference between conceptualizing yourself as a simplified iconographic image and not thinking of yourself as a person? Like, is that a distinction that we want to make? Do we think the visual mental image that, and also, are we assuming that that's his mental image of himself? Is that something that's clarified in later volumes? Because I'm only up to middle school, so.
it gets clarified later on, but
Okay.
it's not I guess it was an over-exaggeration to say that he doesn't think of himself as a human, but he thinks of himself. It's the outsider story. It's the whole, no one gets me, but heightened all the way to Poon Poon is an outsider trying to not be a bird person, essentially, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think it's definitely he is a dude who feels outside of the world around him. Although it's also significant that we spend a bunch of time on other characters, like in the elementary school volume, which is the only one that I've actually finished. Where they are equally outsiders. Like they're not drawn as bird people, right? So we don't have that visual signifier that they're other than or outside of. But what's his name who had the convenience, his family had the convenience store and they did lunches.
Komu.
Yeah, he's. Why do you remember the name of all of these characters?
Because I cared, damn it.
Okay. That's fair. I cared maybe
I
a
can't
third as
stress
much.
how much Oizumi Poon Poon fucked me up.
Okay. I might be the outlier here because I'm like, yeah, this is good. And I'm not like getting fucked up by it. I'm like, wow, that's real. It's real. Although maybe there's just no additional ground for me to gain sadness. But anyway, I maxed out my personal best for sadness, and now there's nowhere to go. It's like when you play Snake and you complete all of it because then the screen's just too full. It's where I'm at. Anyway, so that kid is shown as, I think, the most outside, or the most outsider in terms of like group dynamics during that Misa Factory arc. But Poon Poon is still the one who's visually set apart. And he does get separated from the rest of the group when he like drops a metal pole on his girlfriend's head, which.
By accident.
Yeah, I should clarify that he wasn't like attempting murder. So he's an outsider and visually set apart, but I think we're also shown that or most of the characters feel similarly set apart sometimes or have similar troubles connecting. Because God of Poop Kid certainly is literally set apart by, we don't know if they're hallucinations or he's a dummy with a vivid imagination, but he has his own manifestation of God as well.
It is sort of interesting that the only two characters that see God are Poon Poon and that kid. Because Poon Poon's a nihilist, and that kid is just like dumb happy. He's simple. He seems simple happy.
I wonder about Poon Poon as a nihilist, because in elementary school at least, he just seems sad. It doesn't seem to be philosophically developed. I also, you probably can't be a nihilist if you believe that you literally summon God. But
Oh, yeah.
it's more of a fine point of distinction that I just feel like Nietzsche would want me to get pedantic about.
Got a rep for Nietzsche, I understand.
I really don't. We're not close. Nietzsche and I have a functional working relationship, as two connoisseurs of actualization and misery, but otherwise we're not close. No, but for real, for real. I guess I would like to hear more about your thoughts on everymanness and outsiderdom in that series, although I guess keep spoilers fairly minimal because I'm trying to actually experience this as a text rather than do what I normally do, which is just read about the plot first and then read it so that nothing can surprise me unpleasantly because I don't like that.
So, where are you? So, you finished the first volume.
I finished the first volume. He just had that heart to heart with the captain of the badminton club where he's like, I still have a crush on what's her name who I haven't talked to for 2 years because I'm a creep. And the captain is like, well, if I lose this tournament, you should date her. But if I win, I retain my prize, this woman.
Yeah, I feel like that. I feel like the point of Oyasumi sort of is that it crushes the whole idea that there is a normal or there is an everyman, because we all got our own inner lying stuff. We all got our own ulterior motives for doing things. You think that that. I was gonna say soccer. It's not soccer. That badminton dude is like, oh, super apple pie. Like, oh, I'm really all around good guy, but he's secretly a fucking mess. He's someone who realized that he peaked and that there's really nowhere else to go after this tournament, and he's staking all his. It's everybody living their life with stakes, and you don't realize other people's stakes until you talk to them about it. And it's. Poon Poon never asked for any of this, or to be connected to anybody, really, except his parents. And he somehow always winds up. Okay, connected with his parents and the lady interest, Aiko. I'm sorry, what was the question?
That wasn't a specific question, just sort of talking through your thoughts on the idea of, insider outsider and relatability in that series. It does seem to me to be potentially more of a commonality than a difference that badminton dude has some bad feels. Certainly, there's the point where he talks to his unpleasant friend who is a badminton superstar now. And he's like, maybe don't ruin this kid's life working with his ankle injury. And he's like, actually, though, it's kill or be killed in the game of fucking middle school badminton. So go fuck yourself. Now let's hold our breath while we walk to the music room.
It's not only in the game of badminton, but the game of life.
Yeah, exactly.
That's an intense passage.
So, I mean, it's also obviously ridiculous, like the entire way it's illustrated and the fact that it's juxtaposed with this extremely dumb middle school game of like, how far can you hold your breath? Which is, of course, also sort of a survival-y, like, it's a competition. It's like, life or death or whatever. Or it would be if they were underwater instead of in a school. But it's also like dumb middle school boys looking ridiculous, which is emphasized when he walks past Aiko and she's like drawn with dramatic teary eyes and flowing hair, and he's a bird puffing his cheeks out. So yeah, I think it's a dramatic passage, and Poon Poon being like, well, why can't we all just get along? And then that contrast and like, people live there, as you pointed out, different lives with different motivations, but also that kid is made to look pretty ridiculous in some ways. Like it's maybe part of the broader, maybe nihilistic point of the series of like, all of your philosophies are inadequate to describe the human experience, which is shit kind of sucks, and you live and die alone.
It's true. It's true that there is like the dramatics of this comic are insane. Like everything is a life or death situation, and I mean it's like. It is sort of like an evening feel to see everybody be like, oh, I have all these feels. I'm very. They have feels, but they're cold. It's like, it's that. It's not the absence of feeling, but it's just everybody at. Especially the super badminton guy, the good one. It's sort of like I have to kill my feelings if I ever want to be successful, which is sort of a thing that I feel is actually true in Japanese culture, sort of. Like, they're sort of very like, keep it to yourself, do your shit, hush it up,
It's
hush it
certainly
up.
interesting to contrast the ways that feeling and demonstrativeness are looked at in this series versus in like the classic high school comic, which is very much like the plot tends to be, let's all spend these happy days and sad days together. Let's grow and learn to express ourselves. And like, they're both sort of about managing your emotions and sociability, but it tends to be more of a like, a coming in from being outside, or if they have friends already and don't have to be like force socialized, more about growing and changing and learning to like demonstrate your feelings in a way that is in line with social expectations, versus just the very, even in elementary school, grim, the failures of feeling that Goodnight Boon Boon seems to be dealing with. I'm almost in, I don't know, this is maybe not usual for people reading this comic, but at this point I'm way more interested in his uncle's sad fucking love life than I am in Poon Poon's life in general. I'm just way more interested in his uncle as a character.
Is it mostly because of that freak out during that late that they're trying to sell him that holy
I
water?
do like that. I like his uncle so much. He's so
I'll kill anybody for my own happiness.
I kill a human. I would end a human life. Whatever his exact phrase is there. Yeah, I mean that is pretty delightful. I mean there is that, but the maybe just because I don't understand children, but his uncle seems more sort of realized as a character, like has discernible traits besides depression. Although maybe I was just always going to identify with, or I hesitate to say identify with because I'm trying to be more careful about like relatability and identification and use them more deliberately than just like I get that character. Because I think they're overused a little, but was always going to like or feel I have something in common with a like useless 30-something who should get a real fucking job, because that's like it's my life. But
I get that a lot. You're a unemployed uncle at heart, you
yeah,
know.
that's who I am. Maybe it's also to do with the fact that we see Poon Poon almost entirely through his interiority. Like one of the things that I don't remember you mentioning, but that doesn't mean you didn't, is in addition to being a bird person, he doesn't really have any dialogue.
Wait, who?
Poon Poon.
It's all,
He
yeah.
talks to people, right? Where he's probably like a quiet kid by nature, but we get the impression that in fact he can't speak. But we just see his when he does talk to people, we see it described in a narration box, and we don't know how he phrases things, basically.
I've always wondered a little bit about that, 'cause there's sort of these like moments where it's just his face in a panel, and you can tell that he's saying something, and there's a response to it by the person that he's talking to, but it's
Yeah.
all very in media res. Like there's never, you never see the start or something. You only see the middle or the ending of things throughout the comic, it feels like.
And also you don't hear his you don't see his dialogue. I mean, obviously you
Yeah,
don't hear anything. It's a
actually,
comic book.
no. You don't hear comics?
I don't have synesthesia, so no.
Oh.
Although there's a bunch of like fucking call for papers from various academes of like music and comics and sound and comics. So if you live your synesthetic experience that way, there's a career in writing boring essays for you. There's
Comic.
actually, I'm wrathful about this, so I'm gonna just abruptly change the topic and talk shit about, just gonna shit where I eat for a minute, or where I would like to eat in the future. There's a fucking call for papers on comics and David Bowie. I hate it. I hate it so much. I want to end everything. I want to end comics. It's not worth it. We fucked up.
It's the time that they blew it up.
We just need to end all comics and start over because they done fucked up.
They blew it all up. Sons of bitches.
This isn't going to be my most popular statement on this podcast, but I'm extremely fucking sick of David Bowie-related content. I was sick of it before he died. I'm going to be sick of it for the rest of my goddamn life. I don't see why he had to die at such an inconvenient personal moment, so I have to hear about him again.
Yikes. The views in this podcast expressed may not mirror the views of everyone involved.
It's too late to disclaim our acquaintanceship, Aaron. I'm not trying to make you responsible for my David Bowie anger. But you're still associated. You're guilty by association with my anger.
Okay.
David Bowie's the worst, and I hate him. On a personal level. I didn't know him, but I hate him. I mean, it seems like he did a good job being married eventually. I'm happy for that. He had a kid or multiple kids, and they seem to have liked him okay. And that's great. As a private husband and father, he seems to have done pretty well. But as a public figure, I would like to abolish him. I never want to fucking hear about David Bowie ever again. I've unfollowed so many people so I never have to fucking look at their goddamn David Bowie tribute profile pictures. So
you don't like the Thunderbolt?
I'm so fucking done. It's definitely an interesting look. And, like, aesthetically, dude's obviously very successful. But he was always going to be because we give so much more permission and we give so much more automatic cachet to the fashionableness or the stylishness, the supposedly intrinsic stylishness of thin white men. Like,
yeah, Grace Jones was doing the same thing.
Yeah.
She was a lady in black.
Hang on, my alarm clock is going off.
Still doing her
there
thing.
There we go. Yeah, and I mean, she was a fucking genius. Presumably remains genius. But, like, aesthetically, Bowie is credited with all of this fucking androgyny, and he did it all through the power of male privilege and white privilege and thin privilege. So.
But Ziggy Stardust. But the album Low.
I've actually never really listened to his music much. It's not struck me as something I particularly want to do.
Understandable.
Also, the Thin White Duke is literally his, like, fascism tribute band. So when people are like, hooray! I'm like, do you remember how it was fascism cosplay? Because it was. And that's bad. It was.
Yeah.
He's, like, disclaimed it since. He's made comments about how he was like, maybe I shouldn't have been as into fascism as I was. It's like, wow, really? You fucking think. I forget why he even started that. That's just an opinion that I have expressed on Twitter before, safely behind a locked account so no one can hold me accountable for it. But David Bowie is my enemy, and will be until my death. Because his death certainly hasn't ameliorated things for me.
It's definitely made it so anybody who ever – And it's an unfortunate cool pass to say that you like David Bowie now that he's dead. It's an automatic in with some people, which is...
He's become culturally inescapable more than he already was. And Labyrinth is a creepy movie. Sarah is so much better in that movie than anyone has ever given her credit for.
Hey, if you're a Goblin King and you're trying to make somebody your wife, wouldn't you do the same?
Sorry, how, your wife, your child bride, you mean?
Wouldn't you do the same?
She's like 14!
Come on.
That's always bothered me about that movie, now that I mean, even when I was a kid, she's real young, and they're like, why can't you just grow up? And I'm like, maybe because she's a literal child, you fuckers. So.
There was a really weird time in the 90s where a bunch
14
of
was an adult? No, there were still laws, Aaron. Sorry, carry on.
I was just gonna say that child bride is sort of that was the 90s. What are you gonna do?
The 90s was not a time of rampant child brides in the United States of America.
In movies, not...
I was going to say, that is ahistorical. Okay,
maybe not outside on the streets, but in the movies, I felt like that was a thing.
That's probably still not good. Like, that doesn't... Anyway.
I'm not trying to vindicate it. I'm trying to add to the conversation.
That's fair. I gotta put my lid back on my David Bowie wrath and save it up for another decade or two, at which point it'll probably be permitted to criticize him again. So, this is me.
You can criticize whoever you want. You can make as many mean memes as you want.
Good point. That's the first George Washington died for memes.
Thanks, founding fuckers. They were.
Yeah, that's true. That's real. It's just an especially pleasing and eloquent phrasing of that.
Bam.
Okay, comics, because I'm going to have to do so much editing on this, so much more editing than I've been having to do with our podcasts recently. Because we were doing pretty well at being on topic, and then I ruined it.
I think you should keep it. I think you should keep it all. Don't hide your hate under a bushel.
That's pretty close to the title of another comic I read recently, The Heart Can't Help Who It Hates, which, disappointingly, was just a sketchbook collection, basically. There was very little actual hate in that. It was not like a collection of 10-minute hates in comic form.
The screen cracked and did a bunch of weird stuff.
Okay.
The last I heard was the Heart Hates Who It Wants.
Oh, The Heart Can't Help Who It Hates by Asher Craw. Got it from the library. But it's just like a sketchbook collection, but it has the best title of any comic I've read this year.
That's pretty special.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. It's mostly just like doodles, but I'm sure someone who has more energy for things besides wrath than I do could make claims about like... non-sequential and abstract, non-narrative comics, but mostly it's just, like, a published sketchbook. Very little hearts or hating in it.
If you like hate, you should read No Mercy.
What's that?
No Mercy is another Image comic that is by... I see your face, and I know you have complicated feelings about Image comics. But this one is... It's basically a group of teens go on a trip to Mexico. and everything goes wrong. And they get horribly mangled. And
now I'm sold on it. I wasn't with you, and then you added horribly mangled. Now I am right back into it.
There's a decent amount of mangling. There's a decent amount of, like, some gender politics stuff, and
mangling and gender politics are my two favorite things. And indeed, I would say the two most important running themes of this podcast.
Yeah, we have our strides.
Yeah.
We have our topics.
So, who are these kids and why do they go to Mexico?
It's a right before college trip to build schools in a Central American village, and the bus derails, and they have to survive in the wilderness. And it's very, what's that movie with, what's that book with, it's very Lord of the Flies. It's Lord of the Flies-esque, but in Central America, and a nun who turns out to be, like, maybe involved with a drug cartel, and it's a bunch of teens getting hurt, essentially, is the headline. It's not a very good book. It's not like...
The only thing to recommend it is teens getting mangled?
If you like seeing teens getting hurt, then No Mercy is for you. But if you're looking for an in-depth plot, or like...
So it's a slasher movie, but it's a comic.
Yeah. It's like a tragedy comic. Tragomic.
Tragedy or farce?
I guess it could be considered more farcical, because they're trying to be cool at first, and then they realize, oh, the harsh environment doesn't care about how cool we are, even the slightest bit. You can wear as many slap bracelets as you want. If a condor wants to eat your eyeballs, it will. It'll do it.
Yeah, that's real. Super true. If a condor wants to eat your eyeballs, there's really no help for you. So it's by Alex DeCampi, who has written... Oh, she did Grindhouse. That makes sense. I do feel like there's questions I have about, like, the politics of teens going to, like, American teens going to build schools in Mexico, 'cause... that's a whole thing, isn't it? And then just being murdered by the landscape. Like, I have questions about that as a political statement, but I doubt the comic answers them.
Yeah, it's very much like... The road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Mm.
And it turns out their intentions were to have a cheap, free vacation. And then... Oh no, you're kidnapped by... Oh no, you're kidnapped. Oh no, you're lost in the woods. Oh no, your brother stole a bunch of cocaine.
I mean, that's something that happens to all of us, right?
Spoilers. I should have said spoilers.
Whatever. I don't think... I don't think any of our listenership base is going to be real heartbroken that you've spoiled a couple plot points in a comic that none of them will ever read.
They might turn it into a movie, who knows?
Yeah, that's true. That's the only way to make money in comics now. is get optioned as a movie for something that you still have the rights to. So not most of the stuff that's getting optioned, am I right? The punchline is that creators' creative rights in, or right to their intellectual property in the comics industry is pitifully bad. Yuck, 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 yuck.
Yeah. They'll just steal it right from under you. It's okay, though. I feel like the deal for a comic book artist for getting a movie made about their work is always, we'll give you a t-shirt and like $50.
I mean, most of the stuff for Marvel and DC is done under a work for hire contract, isn't it? So yeah. you don't have, you're lucky if you get the t-shirt. Comedy gold, which is the only kind of gold they can get, because comics will make you poor.
Being creative is a dead-end street.
It's true. Give up now. Go into chartered accountancy. That's where the money is. Because then you can mismanage other people's money and get rich that way.
I was thinking I might go into
chartered accountancy.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, hell yeah. You're a natural chartered accountant.
Thank you.
I knew from the first day I met you, I thought there's a young man who ought to be a chartered accountant.
This is what I'll wear. I'll be like, you can trust me with your money.
Yeah, your heart-shaped shades really say extremely trustworthy. Would someone who's not extremely trustworthy wear those to a work environment? I don't think so. I do not think so.
I don't know what a stock bond is, but I know what cold hard cash looks like.
That's super legit. Okay, what else have you been reading lately?
I read Shoot Around.
Yeah.
I'm all caught up with that, and I was pleasantly surprised. At first, it was sort of like, get to the zombies, I get it. There's levity in Apocalypse.
You just wanted them to cut to the human suffering? Come on, dude, they can't pull the rug out from under the characters if they're not on the rug to start with. If you want real, effective human suffering, you have to give them a glimpse of joy and light first. Otherwise, you're just watching, like, a meat grinder. There's no pathos in a meat grinder.
Okay, I get that. That's fair. Then it got interesting when they got to Zhao's house, or they got to one of their houses and they had to burn it.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's cool. I like it more than I thought I would, because the characters are surprisingly in depth. And I do dig that there's a whole back history with the high school stuff, which doesn't really come into play, but only in snippets, which I like a lot.
They're doing character background as it comes up, rather than in some sort of, like, exposition party.
I wish more people would do that.
It's harder than just writing a chunk of exposition and being like, here's our backstory, and, like, regurgitating it baby bird style.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you were pleasantly surprised. It continues to be one of my faves online right now. Definitely the first moment that I felt, like, invested in it was when they maybe turn what's-her-name into a zombie. They're like, here's all this teen apocalypse drama, and then they're like, And we actually will take out a major member of the main cast. We're not afraid to do that. I'm like, okay, cool. You're telling this story, huh? I'm looking at my list of comics that I've been maintaining because I was kicked out of my house for a while they fixed the floor, which broke because a pipe broke under the floor. So I spent a couple days just hanging out in the library reading mini comics. So I did read a bunch of stuff, but none of it was all that astonishingly good. I read Big Plans, the Collected Mini-Comics by Aaron Nils Steinke, who is, I don't know if I've talked about his stuff before on here. He does Mr. Wolf, which is his super cute little comic about being an elementary school teacher, where he draws himself as a wolf with little nubbin teeth, becoming frustrated with children and educating them and variously engaging with human youths.
I could get into that.
It's cute. It's like a cute little mini comic series. I don't know if it's online because I have not looked into that.
I'm looking
at he posts a bunch of it online, yeah. It's really, it's 100% up my alley as far as these things go, because it is preciously cartooned.
and I can see the cuteness sort of being a deterrent to you.
Well, it's preciously cartooned, but then also sometimes he's just genuinely very angry. And that delights me. I'm trying to think of how to describe why I actually like this thing, because it's one of those comics that's pretty off-brand for what I claim my brand is, e.g., you know, slasher movies and Wrath, but the drawing's real nice, just very expressive. The simple line is really charming. It's a little, like, it feels very realized, like he's figured out how he draws things and he's living that.
I definitely see that in his landscapes, because they're pretty definitely realized.
Yeah.
There's a lot of detail that most people just be like, with precious cartooning like this, that just be like, oh, a few squiggles, that's a tree. But he draws, like, branches and stuff.
Yeah, it reminds me a little of, like, clear line style stuff. Not much, but in that the characters are much more simply drawn than the backgrounds. Much more, like, well, not always. A lot of the time the background is just, like, blank wall. But he's very deliberate in his deployment of where he wants to put detail. So you can tell it's not just like he can't really draw a wolf. He's been much more clear and careful about what he's doing where. Big Plans is, I guess, the comic he did before Mr. Wolf. So it's him being young and messed up and not sure what he's doing with his life. So it's exactly the kind of bland slice of life shit that I love so much. that I don't really feel correct in recommending to anyone, because it's so, it's not, like, exciting. Yeah, so I thought Big Plans was great, like, the collection of it. Wasn't a surprise, because I like his other stuff. I like Mr. Wolf, but a lot of the sort of bleakness that creeps in around the edges of Mr. Wolf, or like the, I should say the human quirkiness, rather, right? The bits and pieces of a unsmoothed edges of a human being that are sort of delightful in Mr. Wolf, because it's a role that we've really romanticized, elementary school teacher, where it's like, oh, they're people of goodness and light, and then you know, seeing the bits and edges of someone who's a little bit crankier in that position. So it's much the same, like, self-conscious being a jerk. But instead of being about him as a wolf teaching students, it's him as a young 20-something not having his shit together and getting really drunk at the Oscars one time. So 100% my brand, 0% recommended to anyone else. I mean, maybe if they already know they like boring autobiocomics, in which case, yeah, totally, go for it. It's so good. But I don't think you would like it. But that's okay. The point of our comics podcast is not have good taste.
No, we have terrible taste.
Yeah, that's a fact. Man, I feel like we were starting to do, like, insight and analysis on Goodnight Poon Poon, and then instead we took a hard left into just not doing that at all.
Well, that's a dense work.
Yeah, know? For sure.
We could come back to it. I really want you to read all of it so I can, like, talk to you about the ending.
Okay.
Happens.
So we can reschedule clever insight into Goodnight Poon Poon until after I've read the whole thing.
I'm gonna reread it too, because it's been a while and I feel like I need to have my soul broken a little bit more before I realize I should do things.
Yeah. But really, we're both in a good position to realize that all human effort is futile and life is suffering. I think we're both at really optimal points in our lives to really sit with that information.
Yeah, early 20s.
Yeah.
Mid to late 20s.
God, we're so old, Aaron.
Do you eat yogurt?
No. I mean, I bought yogurt from Whole Foods once, and I ate that, and I was like, this is fine, but I don't.
I've been eating yogurt.
God, you're so old.
I don't know,
I think of yogurt as kid food, because, like, Go-Gurt, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Go-Gurt's for the youths. Yogurt's for kids! I guess when I was in college, and was eating in the dining hall, I had a lot of yogurt, because that's what was sort of edible there. So, I associate yogurt with frivolous youths, not responsible adulthood.
I've been thinking about trying to get into New York castings.
Uh-huh.
And if I become an actor, tell me not to.
No, that seems funny. I want to see where that goes.
No. No.
Also, you still need to get famous so I can just sort of ride your coattails into success, so.
They'll be, we'll see. Would you settle for like gainfully employed?
I don't know how much coattail writing I can do on gainful employment, but I'm happy for you if it works out.
Thanks.
Yeah. Do you have a New York Public Library card yet? Have you pursued your library destiny as well as pursuing your destiny as an actor?
Ooh.
Buddy. Buddy. Buddy friend. Buddy friend pal.
I found out where the libraries are.
That's good.
I've looked at them from the outside.
Uh-huh.
But I have yet to go get a library card. I do have a bunch of books.
That's good. This looks good. Looks book-like. Composed of books.
But no, I do not have a library card.
Man, how are you going to read things? You can't buy books every time you want books. What kind of libertine existence is that?
I was just going to buy books until I was broke, and then just hang out near dumpsters and wait to see somebody throw a book away, then I'd take it.
But the library is books for free. Also, if you just, like, steal a book from the library and then never go back to that library again, they can't really do anything about it. So, it's not just books you can borrow for free. If you're willing to burn your bridges, you can just steal probably at least one book from the library without any consequences. I mean, don't, obviously, that's bad. But you could. So, what's not to love?
Yeah, I do like stealing.
That's not how I'd hope to sell you on the concept of a library card, but if that's what it takes, man.
No, I'm not a thief, but I will get a library card. Hopefully I'll even hang out at the library.
Yeah, it's full of I hear that it's also full of useful resources for, you know, being a human being who's alive, but mostly.
I read The Vision, and I was into it.
What's that one?
It's a Marvel comic, but it's about the android from the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to be a normal dad in Washington, D.C., and he makes a family out of bits of his brain and a dead android.
What? Wait, isn't that an episode of Star Trek Next Gen? I'm pretty sure it is. I'm pretty sure Data makes himself a robot daughter so he can be a human.
It does not go well. Surprisingly.
Well, it doesn't go well for Data in Next Gen either.
It may just be that Star Trek episode inspired this series of comics, but it's pretty good. It's good. I like it. It's like him, his wife, his son, and his daughter trying to be normal with a bunch of Looky Loos being like, hey, ain't you all's robots? Robits? And they're like, yeah, robots. And we save the world sometimes. And then it turns into, we don't trust you. We don't like you. Get out.
So it's like robo-discrimination?
There's a lot of robot discrimination.
Gotta love gotta love Marvel's interest in showing the evils of discrimination through allegory and never through actual issues. Just their absolute dedication to diversity through allegory and not actual diversity. That's really admirable on their part.
Yeah, they're good at it.
Yeah. I would say as long as the company has been around, that's pretty much been their, since they stopped being timely. And that's hilarious, they stopped being timely, and then they made a real commitment to not being timely in their issues. Not that they were timely when they were timely, but that's a delight.
Come on, Marvel, hire more ladies, hire more... help us out.
Help us want to bother to spend money on you.
Did you hear they got that guy who wrote Between the World and Me to write?
Yeah, he's writing Black Panther, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. How do we think that's gonna be?
I think they're gonna cancel it real fast. I'm gonna be honest.
Yeah, that was a laugh of rueful agreement, not a laugh of like, haha, that'll never happen, because that's what's gonna happen. Which is too bad, but...
Maybe I could be wrong. Maybe it'll be a smash hit, but I don't think the intelligentsia is gonna be real into, like... someone actually trying to talk about race relations.
Yeah.
I feel like that'll be rough on them.
The Marvel reading public is not necessarily gonna flock to this, since it's not, you know, X-Men style, like, we're definitely really committed to addressing discrimination through this particular lens. Yeah, no, I think you're right. And, like, they're probably going to blame sales numbers. It's going to be bad. It's just going to be bad all around. Nothing about it is going to be good. Did they... postpone Black Panther solo. Yeah, but he's in Civil War, I guess.
Oh, did you see the trailer?
I did. I don't care. I know that's not a surprise, right? But does not look like something that I am going to care about. Obviously, my perfect superhero movie is just Bureaucracy, the film. I just really want to watch superheroes just have to follow Robert's Rules of Order and have a nice parliamentary session. I want every movie to be more boring.
That's what I'm...
Yeah.
You just don't want any... no drama.
Oh, there's drama. It's just very boring drama. It's just them squabbling... ideally, the first half of the movie is them setting the agenda, like, fighting about what they're gonna talk about, and then in the end, they have to table all their significant issues, nothing actually comes to a vote. That's my perfect movie.
12 angry men, but 12 superheroed angry men.
Yeah. Perfect.
Okay. You should write that. And sell it to DC.
Yeah, get in on that sandwich whenever you want money that we've established comics provides.
That's that job security, when you can get a sandwich whenever you want.
Hell yeah. Okay, I guess if neither of us have more comics things. Hooray, another successful podcast in the podcast can. We did it.